Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Regan, and I'm a licensed addiction counselor for Heartview Foundation, as well as a certified grief counselor. And welcome to a program that we call Recovery Chronicles. It's a weekly program. We interview people who are in long-term recovery. And by the way, this program is broadcast a couple of times a week, Tuesdays and Saturday mornings at 8 a.m., and then it is archived as a podcast at radioaccess.org. So that's kind of cool. And we've recorded about 50 of these programs so far. Special guest today is Steve Rook, he's going to talk about his life and his recovery. Welcome. Thanks for agreeing to come on the program, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where are you from? And tell us a little bit about your family and your upbringing, maybe.
Well, I was born and raised in Northeast Texas. And yeah, I'm a Texan. Proud Texan, I guess.
Aren't they all?
Yeah, a little bit. Where do I start?
Yeah, well, big family, small family?
I guess just your run-of-the-mill family. I'm the oldest of three kids. I've got two younger sisters, and just had a fairly normal childhood, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, and my dad was a trucker, and he was gone a lot. And, mm-hmm. you know, and just seemed to have everything I needed. I didn't have everything I wanted, but yeah, you know, but that's just life, I guess.
That's life. Do we all ever have everything? So what brought you to North Dakota? How did you get up here?
Oh,
long story. Or
no, I was getting in a lot of trouble back home, and you know, with my drug use and stuff, and I wanted to change that geographical change they talk about.
Yeah, geographical cure.
Yeah. Yep. And I had the opportunity to come up here and start over, which is kind of what I did, you know. I've been here, 12 years, I think now. So.
Okay. Did you come up here for a job, or you knew somebody?
I knew somebody that I'd never met on the computer, and they gave me the opportunity to come up and start over.
Yeah, well, I suppose back then there were a lot of jobs, and there still are a lot of jobs in North Dakota, right? So what was your drug of choice, and when were you first introduced to it or to drugs?
First introduced to drugs, I was around 14 years old.
Maybe. How old are you now?
I'll be 57 in September.
So. Okay.
We bought a joint from a guy from down the street, mm-hmm. and he said it had angel dust in it, which we thought was really cool. Wow. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the first time I got high, I guess.
And you liked it?
Liked it. It was, it took me away from me, you know?
Yeah, right, right. So was it always angel dust or cannabis, or did you?
No. Yeah. Later on in years, you know, all through all the drinking and everything else, I got introduced to pain meds.
Uh-huh.
You know, just not real sure how, but...
Right, otherwise known as opioids.
Yes. Yep. And I absolutely fell in love.
Yeah.
And I started... I kind of figured out as I went along, you know, the more addicted to it, I guess you could call it... figured out on my own how to start doctor shopping and hitting all the doctors. And
explain that. I'm glad you brought this up. So did your first use of painkillers begin with an actual prescription? I assume it probably,
no.
I see,
no.
Yeah. So
no,
you were
no.
you were buying them from someone or getting them somewhere?
Yeah, I had my grandfather, who passed away from cancer, had a bottle of Percodan, I think mm-hmm. it was. Mm-hmm. No idea what it was. I'd heard the name somewhere, and I heard you could get high on it, so I got a couple of them.
Yeah,
and
how old were you?
Oh, I was in my 30s then.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well.
And that did the trick.
Yeah, yeah. So are you saying that You probably didn't cross over into addiction until you were in your 30s, or?
Probably early 30s is when I really.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you mentioned you brought up doctor shopping. I'm glad we're talking. A lot of people don't know what doctor shopping is, or what self-harming is in order to get opiate. So explain doctor shopping.
Doctor shopping. My thing was dentist's office, because I could fake a toothache or whatever.
Yeah.
Tell them whatever I needed to, you know. And I would tell them that that I didn't want to have any procedure done right now. I could come back in a few days or something. And they're like, well, all we can do is give you pain meds and antibiotics. And, you know, and I would do that just over and over.
You threw away the antibiotics.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, you mentioned Percocet. Is that what you mentioned?
Percodan.
What other? So, what would the dentist usually give you, for example?
Usually hydrocodone.
Okay, yeah, and I don't have. I probably don't have to tell you. I mean, hydrocodone is one of the most popular.
Yes.
OxyContin. I mean, way up there. I mean, in popularity you went from dentist to dentist,
Doctor to doctor.
Yeah. And I suppose the word is out on the street as to which doctors are easy or which ones are difficult.
There was a few, you know, you could hear here and there that, go to him. He'll write you a script or.
Right. Did you take them orally? By swallowing? I use a big word here, and that is the so-called physiology of opioid addiction. But so, when you were in withdrawal, meaning you needed more pills, how did you feel? How does that make you feel?
Withdrawals are terrible. You can't sleep at night. You just sweat profusely, and your stomach's cramped up, and you have to go to the bathroom constantly. It's not good.
Yeah, it's been described to me as like the worst stomach flu you ever had.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and so did you ever get into the self-harming?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, I didn't know, but describe some of that. In other words, there's some PSAs on television right now that depict that.
I learned that if you could fake, like, breaking your ribs, that there's nothing they can do except rest and pain meds.
I see.
And I would take, I don't know, a hammer or a screwdriver or something and, like, beat on the side of my chest or something until it bruised, and I would scratch it up a little bit, and go to the doctor and make up some story. I fell out of a tree or out of a truck or something. And of course, all they can do is, not all of them did, but 95% of them would, write you a prescription.
And normally, how large would that prescription be? I mean, for how many milligrams and how many pills?
Back then, it was usually 5 milligram tablets, and anywhere from 10 to 24 usually in a script. Every now and then you'd get lucky and get one with 30 and a refill.
Right. Yeah, I've heard of that. I mean, that's pretty common as far as I hear from patients. A script for 30 or even 60, which is... And for that matter, 10 milligram or even 30 milligram, very, very powerful. By the way, our guest is Steve Rook today, and I didn't know you were from Texas. So.
Yeah, I say y'all a lot.
Do you? But he's a person now from Bismarck and a person in long-term recovery. So let's face it, you were caught up in this world of addiction. To opioids, the painkillers, and very, very powerful. So how bad did it get? I mean,
it got really bad. I mean, I would if I my dad, my grandparents, anybody that had meds, I would steal them. I mean, I don't know a better word, just steal them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would do anything. It didn't matter. I've lost my family over it, jobs.
Yeah.
Just walked away from jobs just because, so I could go get some meds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In my mind, it made me work better and made me a better person. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. So, of course, it eventually took you more and more and more pills to feel the so-called euphoria.
Right. The tolerance level.
Yeah.
At first, 1 to 1.5 5-milligram pills would totally do it. And in the end, before I stopped, I was taking 20 to 30 10-milligram oxycodones a day.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I've heard, I've seen in video documentaries and such, I remember the story of one professional basketball player who was, he was taking 50, 60 pills a day. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how many milligrams, but as you know, it's, I'm not going to use the word common, but sometimes athletes get into the painkiller abuse because of injuries and, and pretty soon, you know, they can't play without it. And they're, you know, they go to bed in pain, wake up in pain. And so it can be just such a vicious cycle. So how and when did you make the decision or come to the realization that, hey, I got to do something. I have to change.
Oh, that was actually years ago. But I knew I had a problem, but I couldn't stop.
Yeah. Well, so you were in denial?
Oh,
like, well, I'll stop someday.
And always someday. Someday never came.
But obviously, you're in recovery now. So
yes.
What finally did it? Treatment or?
Yeah, I just got sick and tired of being sick and tired, so to speak. And there was a place here in town that I'd been following on Facebook. It was a women's sober living home. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that would be, the stories I read there were just phenomenal. You know, and I thought that would just be so cool if they had a place for men.
Yes. Yeah.
And one day I was reading there they had opened a place for men.
Yeah. I think we're talking about Hope Manor.
Hope Manor, yes. Yeah, yes, indeed.
A great organization.
Yes. And I was in a real bad way. I had gone, and I'm also an IV drug user.
Okay, yes.
Amongst all the pills, meth, methamphetamines, and cocaine. And
so it was. You were taking meth intravenously, IV, and
yes,
as well as cocaine.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And crack cocaine.
Yes.
Also, but, basically, I was in a motel room in Dickinson. I was down and out. I'd lost everything I owned. And I was using a lot of cocaine at that time. And I got in touch with a lady from Hope Manor.
Right.
And it still took her 2 weeks of talking back and forth before I finally gave in. And,
So you moved here? Right.
Came to Hope Manor.
Yeah. Are you still at Hope Manor?
No.
I know that and you could tell us a little bit about Hope Manor and they have rules, you know, rules that you have to abide by. Yet tell us about some of that.
They have a lot of rules. Excuse me.
It's all right. I know you have to go to a meeting every day, you know, a community meeting.
You have to attend so many meetings. Mm-hmm. If you're working, you have, I think it's like 7 meetings a week you have to go to. And if you're not working, it's 14 a week, I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you have to sign in and out everywhere you go.
Mm. And you're living there with other men.
You're living there with other men.
Right.
And you're self-supporting.
Yes.
You buy your own food and everything. And it's basically, you learn how to live life over again.
Yeah.
everything good that I wasn't doing, kind of learn how to redo it again.
Yeah.
You know, you pay your bills, you buy your food, you cook your food, and just learn to be a responsible person.
Yeah. Right. But, right. Yeah. How long were you there?
8.5 months, I think it was, okay, roughly.
Yeah. Was it hard to leave? You know, you're there. With the security of having
it was,
support. And
it was hard to leave.
Yep.
But their family, you know, and I, how do I put this? I've relapsed since then.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Hope Manor, they stood by me. You know, they never gave up on me as
Wonderful.
Far as, you know, the people there.
And yeah.
They let me hurt when I needed to hurt, but, you know, when I reached my hand out, they reached back.
Yeah. And what was your longest period of sobriety or of abstinence?
Before Hope Manor?
Yeah, before or after. Uh-huh. Or in your life?
Probably 6 to 9 months, but I was in prison. So,
I know when you and I talked last week or the week before, I know that I think by the time this program airs, you will have put together 1 year, you know, of sobriety. Or
June 1st will be a year.
Okay, so coming. So congratulations and
thank you.
You know, coming. What sorts of things do you enjoy most about sobriety? Or I like to use the word recovery.
Yeah, just being awake and, you know, being a part of stuff instead of, you know, hiding in the shadows and always wondering, you know, where can I get high again? Or, you know, today I'm a part of it. I go to meetings. I have home group, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm an active member of a 12-step recovery program. So,
yeah. I assume you're working. Do you mind saying what field you work in or what?
I drive a cab
for
a local company here in town.
Hey, that's got to be interesting.
That's very interesting.
You know,
I'm faced with a lot of situations.
Yeah. Sure. Once in a while you might run into a high person, right, as a passenger.
Every now and then, yeah.
Well, we need good cab drivers and we need understanding.
Yeah.
You know, understanding cab drivers. Yeah. So what kind of a support group do you have now? Have you put together? Certainly you've got you have support with the community support meetings.
I mean, as far as people?
Yeah, people, friends, people who, you know, who kind of rally around you and support you.
My main core group is mainly the Hope Manor people.
Good, yeah. How about family? I mean, have you reconnected with?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I have no, like, blood relatives up here.
Yes.
But I have a remarkable family here. 4 stepdaughters, grandkids, granddaughters that they're the love of my life. And
wonderful. Yeah. How about your sister? You know, your sisters?
My sisters back home in Texas, they're
good.
They're great.
Wonderful. Have you been back down there? Or
I hadn't made it home in a couple years now.
Yeah. Yeah. How about mom and dad? Are they still with us?
Or? My mom's still here. Mm-hmm. My dad passed.
Okay. All right. Good relationship with mom now.
Yeah.
She knows you're on the straight and narrow now.
We talk once a week, sometimes more.
Yeah. So what made the answer might be Hope Manor, but you know, what about Hope Manor really made the difference? I mean, here you've had a, you know, many, many years of using using different drugs, et cetera, but what finally, what were some of the most helpful or useful things that you could, you know, kind of hang on to?
Oh, it was just a safe place to be. You're not really sheltered, but in a way you are, you know, and they really get you into the recovery program.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
Would you say your recovery also has a spiritual side?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
That's where I kind of, you know, I grew up going to church, And it was a lot of times I felt like it was shoved down my throat, and I felt, I never felt like a, I don't know what's the word, Christian, because of the things I was doing and everything. I'm like, God could never love me. But today I realize that's why I'm still here, you know.
Yeah.
I got a God that I can talk to now that I know, you know, is there for me. And I talk to God like I talk to you nowadays, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, that's great to have that God to turn to and
yeah.
You know, and for security. And what are some other things that are way at the top of your list as far as your recovery?
Oh, going to my meetings and trying to help other people.
There you go. Yeah. Helping others, I think, can...
I see people on a daily basis, almost every day, that, you know, I talk to, and they may not be in a good spot, you know, and I tell them, you know, I understand. You know, I know where you're at. I've been there, you know.
Yeah.
I give some of them a phone number. If you ever, you know, if you need help, just give me a call.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you can take them to a... support group meeting, you know?
Yep. I've gotten
good for
two
you.
Or three to go to meetings.
So. Yeah, wonderful. Well, good for you. You're doing you're doing great work. So for someone who might be listening to this radio program right now and they know that you're in trouble, or they know that they're in trouble, you know, like you once were, and maybe they've been putting it off and putting it off and knowing that the they've got a problem and they have to change. What do you say to them? What's your best advice?
Don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Reach out to someone.
Yeah.
You know, there's... Just don't give up.
Sure. Yeah. Were you ever suicidal?
Maybe to a degree, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, I suppose people told you a time or two that, hey, what you're doing is slow suicide. You know, if you're taking opioids and shooting, you're injecting meth and injecting cocaine. I mean, that's slow death.
That's a very slow death, and it's agonizing. I don't even know how to describe it.
Right.
It's just...
Yeah, it's just, so I assume you're kind of enjoying life today.
In
comparison.
Life's real good right now. You know? Got a job and I get to see my kids and just be a part of life.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know, and I say that, being on this radio program is helping others, you know. I mean,
I hope it can.
Yeah, you know what I mean. One of the, I think the our mission is to let people know that recovery is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to give them. And as you know, I'm in long term recovery myself, and it is possible. And as you said,
it's very possible.
Yeah. Reach out to
Whole Banner and ask.
I happen to work at Heartview, or reach out to your minister.
Yep.
Your minister, your pastor, your doctor,
police officers.
Your cab driver,
police officers.
Sure.
They can, you know, if you seriously want to change and got no one to turn to, police officer will help you.
Yeah.
They're not bad people.
Yeah, no good point. Do you have any goals? And like, what would you like to see yourself doing 6 months down the road, or a year down the road, or 5 years down the road? Anything, or are you just kind of happy with?
Right now, I'm in a good spot right now.
Yeah,
I don't want to start projecting out in the future, you know, and get disappointed or something. Things are just going really good right now.
Yeah. You know, as and I should say, we're talking to Steve Rook from now from Bismarck, formerly from Texas, but and you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on Radio Access. So this morning at the treatment center, I was talking about gratitude, and I was saying, boy, if you don't hear the word gratitude in treatment, or if you don't hear it at support group meetings, I mean, something's wrong. But what would you have to say about gratitude?
Gratitude is, there's a saying, I can't remember.
Gratitude, I know there's an attitude of gratitude.
Attitude of gratitude. Oh, it's just good to be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
You know, you put some people keep a gratitude journal, and actually, I'm one of them. And where you maybe number the page from 1 to 10, and
oh, you had the gratitude list.
Yeah,
everything you're grateful for. I did one of them about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I was kind of down on myself, and so I sit down. I'm like, okay, I got to get back to the basics here. So yeah, I got out a piece of paper and wrote down 10 or 15 things that I was grateful for.
Right.
And, you know, and you sit there and look at it and you kind of wonder why you're even down on yourself. You know, you got all of this stuff going for you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and usually at the top of the list is recovery.
Yes.
Recovery.
You know? Yes, absolute.
Number two might be life. I'm alive.
Yeah.
You know, number three, four, it could be, hey, I've got food to eat. I've got a roof over my head.
Yeah.
My car starts.
Bills are paid you know, got a vehicle.
You know, and I think some, there are, you know, people who, with substance abuse disorder, you know, they sit around a lot of the time feeling sorry for themselves. You know?
Oh, exactly, yeah.
You know, woe is me. You know,
yeah, poor me.
Yeah, instead
pour
of...
Pour me another drink.
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, and those are some of the concepts I think that we learn in at support group meetings or in therapy, attitude, mm-hmm. Humility.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, you got to get humble.
Right. You know, you have to be, as they say, you have to be able to, you know, get down on your knees once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, and ask for help. Another one I think of is forgiveness. You know, a lot.
Yes.
Resentment is probably the number one.
Resentment is the number one offender.
Yeah.
It'll get you.
Yeah. I mean, resentment will get you. We'll get you using again.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Real quick.
And of course, the opposite of resentment is forgiveness. And so,
yes. I've had to ask for a lot of forgiveness. And I have to be okay with whether they forgive me or not, you know? It's not about me.
Yep. As long as you've made that sincere apology,
you know, that's all I can do.
And you feel sorry in your heart, whether or not they forgive you is kind of beside the point. And one of my mentors, and he's no longer with us, but he was the CEO of Hurtview for a long time. His name is Ron Gerhardt. And he always said, one of his favorite sayings was, what people think about me or say about me is none of my business.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of wisdom there, because too often we're worried about what other people think about us.
That's a hard one. You know, you get your ego involved in everything, and it always has to be about me. In the end, it has nothing to do with me.
Right. And that's why, that's why helping others.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Gets me out of me.
Right. It pulls you out of yourself. Hey, I told you this half hour would go fast, and we're done.
Wow.
And by the way, we say the Serenity Prayer at the close of each program, so if you would say it with me. Our guest has been Steve Rook from the Bismarck area, person in long-term recovery. Thank you, Steve.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we'll say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
The courage
to change the things I can.
And
the wisdom to know the difference.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand me. keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done, a little part of it in everyone, but every junkie's like a setting sun.